This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Underground, overground, wumbling free. The wombles of Wimbledon, common are we. Making good use of the things that we find. Things that the everyday folks leave behind.
It is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show here on Love Sport. We are back in our new time, our new allocated slot here on Love Sport London at 10 p.m. every Thursday night. You can catch us right here on Thursdays, 10 p.m. through to 11 p.m. That's no longer Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. or 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. What was it, George? 8 till 9. I've already forgotten about it, mate. It's in the past.
We all have.
Love Sport London, 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. We are on Love Sport London right now over on Love Sport. Charlie Hawkins is talking all things Middlesbrough and Preston North End. So if you want to listen to that, tune in to Love Sport. But if you want to stick here with us and the Wombles and the guys from the 9 Years podcast, it's the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show here on Love Sport London. I'm here with George Jones. Hello, George.
Hello. How have you been?
I'm good, mate. You've had a bit of a trim up.
Yeah, I know.
Go on, talk to me.
Not pleased with it.
Are you not?
Not pleased with it at all.
I was going to say, so for the listeners out there, George, you normally come in with a slight... I mean, you got your curls, your natural curls. Yeah. You normally come in with your wispy little beard. That's remained. That's good. That's part of your identity, your culture as an AFC Wimbledon fan. And normally you've got sort of curly, flowing locks, but they've cut it quite short, boss.
Yeah, much shorter than I was intending it to be,
really?
If I'm honest.
Not your usual hairdresser that you normally go to?
No, sadly not. I was hoping to keep it long to try and enjoy it while I can before watching Wimbledon makes me lose it all, so...
Oh, crikey, mate. I feel your pain there, mate. Yeah. Don't worry about that. But just be thankful that you got some.
Yeah, for now anyway.
But did you not go to your normal hairdresser?
No, sadly
Why did
not.
You switch it up?
I was away over Christmas and I...
Dangerous.
I made the risk.
Very,
didn't pay off.
Very dangerous, mate. Okay, well, speaking of Christmas, of course, the festive fixtures. We haven't discussed those since you were last on the show. In fact, since you and I last spoke, it was the win over Doncaster. 1-4 since then, of course. Now, when we last spoke, that game over Doncaster put you guys 3 points clear of the relegation zone. We are now on the 9th of January, 3 points clear of the relegation zone.
Yeah, and it was in true Wimbledon fashion where we looked at the sort of fixture run over Christmas and New Year, said, you know, we should be getting 6 points or so from this run, or 4 points as a minimum, and these are the games we get them from. In true Wimbledon fashion, we lost the games we thought we'd get something and won the games we didn't think we'd get anything from, which is just sums us up. And the problem with that means, even though you're gaining points, it means the teams around you are gaining points as well. And you really look at it, yes, we beat Bristol Rovers, which for me is probably our performance of the season so far, on Boxing Day. We then lost to Oxford. No shame at all in that. They were probably the best side I've seen this year. They'll go up automatically without any question of a doubt from what we saw in that one game. And then we drew to Southend, which is almost embarrassing to drop points against Southend.
So, okay, let's rattle through them, shall we? We'll go through them in a little bit more detail, because we'll start with Bristol Rovers. Now, they've had the managerial change. Of course, Graham Coughlin has moved on to Mansfield. Ben Garner now in charge. Not the best start to life for him, of course, at Bristol Rovers.
It was his first game against us. He made 3 subs, brought off their 3 players who were performing best on the day, and then threw away a lead against us, where our record at Bristol is famously horrific. And, I mean, we scored 2 absolutely beautiful goals, both off people's shins from about 2 yards out. World-class goals from us. But they all count. Somehow we got the win. But I have to say, it was probably our performance of the season. And going over Christmas, a ground we always do poorly at, it was very encouraging. And I'm glad we got that win looking at that table now, because looking at how things went the rest of the festive period, that win could be essential come the end of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And that defeat to Oxford, you're right. I think it's just 2 defeats in 16 for them. In terms of runs throughout the EFL, you have to look at Leeds, at West Brom, at Millwall, in fact, who are showing championship form at the moment, promotion form under Gary Rowett. That pretty much rivals their run. Oxford, by far and away, the form team in League 1 and League 2.
Yeah, it was one of those things where obviously we desperately wanted to beat them because of who their manager is and the history there. But watching them, as much as it pains me to say, they were a very good side and the best team we've played. They were better than Sunderland, better than Ipswich, miles better than Wickham. I still have no idea how Wickham are anywhere near the top of the league. I know they've fallen away a bit over the last couple of weeks.
Which is one point in four, yeah, it is, isn't it? But still top of the league, quite remarkably.
Yeah. But the thing is, Wickham have always looked like a poor side. They were nothing special. Ask any fan who's seen them play this year. They're nothing special. No one knows how they are, where they are.
You're not alone in that, by the way. So when we have Sunderland fans on this station, they are quite scathing of Wickham. Whether they're partly, I don't know, envious of the fact that Sunderland should be up there, although they're now just one point off the playoff spots. And look, we're going to get into a lot of the EFL action over the course of the past couple of weeks later on in the show. It is truly a bonkers Division League One. But they say the same thing about Wickham. They cannot believe that they're up there.
Yeah, and it's mad that they're not very good. They don't play good football at all. And they don't win games. If you look at their goal difference, it's quite low considering where they are in the table. So I'm not really sure how they are. And they'll finish mid-table only because of how well they've done at the start of this season. But it's not a good sign for them. But, you know, like I said, Oxford, they'll be the team that probably wins the league because they were miles better than anyone else I've seen.
Yeah, winning the league.
Yeah, I can see Oxford winning it. I mean, they were, like I said, levels ahead. They were playing some really good, proper passing football, playing it around. And the fact we only lost by one goal against them, for me, is a real positive because they were miles ahead of anything else I've seen this season.
Well, they're quite incredibly. Didn't they go and lose away at Doncaster?
Yeah, it's just League One this year. Anyone can beat anyone.
Which is just bonkers because Donny hadn't scored in seven of their previous eight. They hadn't won in four home games at the time. Oxford had scored more away goals than any other team or as many as any other team in the division. Madness.
Yeah, that was one of those results where it just confused everyone and it's incredibly bizarre that in League One these results keep happening because Christmas is normally when a side keeps pulling away, but that isn't happening in League One, and it's really hard to. I mean, we're playing Portsmouth on Saturday. We'll talk about that later in the show, but it's those results like Doncaster against Oxford that give teams like us hope when we're playing the big boys of this year. Just anyone can beat anyone, home or away, and it makes no logic to it at all.
No, zero logic. No one seems to want to pull away from the relegation zone. No one seems to want to get into the playoffs. No one seems to want to challenge Wickham at the top of the league. Quite bonkers. And speaking of bonkers, mate, you mentioned Southend. Now, I think that is one clean sheet in them in 43 games. We know that they are in a perilous position in the relegation spots at the moment. Had Bolton, of course, not had their 12-point deduction, Southend would be rocky os bottom of the League One table. Absolutely nowhere near safety. They're not even now. Just 9 points. When you consider yourselves and one other team are on 24 points outside of those relegation zones, they are a horror show, yet they managed to get a draw at King's Meadow.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to say they were miles better than when we played them away earlier in the season. But still, we should have won that game. It was a horrific penalty decision at the end that they meant they equalised late in the game. But we had enough chances to put them away. And you just got to hope that that doesn't cost us come the end of the season. But realistically, if we want to have a realistic chance of staying up, we need to be beating Southend. And if we fail to do that, we need to beat a team like Portsmouth or Oxford to make up for the points we've dropped.
Hmm. He went on the offensive, Sol Campbell, though, didn't he? Didn't bring three strikers on?
Yeah, he did. It was an interesting one, and they did improve as the game went on, and they did threaten us towards the end. But we did have chances that we should be putting away. And for me, I think that's something we do need to work on, because where we are, the number of chances we create, we can't afford to be throwing away chances and throwing away leads against sides like Southend.
Mm. Good goal from Callum Riley, you have to say. Yeah. Did the classic, the customary ears and the shush. Yeah. It's a standard thing for any AFC Wimbledon player these days.
Yeah, no, I think it is. And again, it was very good to see at Bristol Rovers, against Southend, against Oxford, Glyn Hodges getting a lot of stick from opposition fans and giving a bit of stick back to them. And it's nice to see we're a team that people don't want to play against anymore, because that's been something that's bugged me for a long time, that opposition fans like playing against us.
Mm.
And for me, that's the opposite of what should happen. Like old Wimbledon had it, where you don't want to play against us, and that's what you need to have to be able to stay up when you're a club of our size and our budget.
Joe Piggott as well, kind of back on the scoring trail-ish. 2-2, of course, the goal against Bristol Rovers and against AFC Wimbledon. I have to say it as well, he's taking them well. I know you talk about the shinner, but the goal against Oxford, Well taken.
Yeah, and that was the thing. I mean, I've been talking about it for a while on the show. Of he needs to find form, and he's the sort of player who once he gets one, he'll get on, go on a roll. And the one off his shin from 2 or 3 yards that nearly went down as an own goal away to Bristol. It's one of those where it's kick-started him. He seems to be playing with a bit more confidence, a bit more energy. And hopefully this can kick-start him in the second half of the season, because even though Force is still with us, we don't know if he'll be with us at the end of the month. And if he's not, we really need Pickett to be contributing goals to give us even the smallest chance of staying up this year.
Still a bit concerned about Marcus Force, aren't you, mate?
Yeah, he's still with us. He's been mentioned in a couple of the sort of website articles talking about loan extensions and players who we're, you know, looking at coming. And even though he's very clearly still at the club right now, I can't help but think it depends on what Brentford do in the rest of the window.
Well, I have to say, word on the street and certain sources have suggested that the development of Marcus Force is considered to be far greater at AFC Wimbledon. Dervisoglu is, of course, coming in January. It looks, I would imagine, like he is going to stay at AFC Wimbledon, because that is the rumour circulating at the moment.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, I think a lot of our fans are hoping, but none of our fans would even dare say that out loud in case we jinx it somehow. Because we're still hearing all these reports about Brentford are still looking at a striker. You know, like Lyle Taylor's been mentioned in a couple of local papers. And you just got to worry, if they don't get one of them, do they panic and bring Force back?
Mm.
But until, let's be honest, until February 1st, when that window's shut and they can't recall him anymore, we won't relax until then, because there's always that possibility.
Okay. Just very quickly before we move on, Nathan Trott as well, speaking of another loanee. Brilliant. Best player over the festive period, mate.
Yeah, he's one of those who I've got a bit of criticism for criticising in the past. But we got some stats on him. And if you look at purely the above average goals he has saved, based on the shots he's faced, he's top of the league.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I've never doubted him as a shot stopper. It's been coming for crosses where we've been criticising him in the past. And I still have that doubt, but he is getting better and you can definitely see an improvement there. Whether we'll end up going back to West Ham and making it like Ramsdale has. But it does mean that he's definitely improving. He's coming along. It's just a question of now, will we see enough of that benefit in the second half of the season to make a slow start worth it?
I'm glad you said that, mate. I was actually coming in today for today's show thinking I'm going to go at George if he starts to criticise Nathan Trott again. Because from what I saw of the action over the festive period, yes, okay, you can look at various mistakes that he's made, but when you compare those to the amount of saves, and I know Tranmere is already done and dusted, but he made a number of very, very good saves in that game. I know that they ended up winning the encounter, but it could have been a lot more had it not been for Nathan Trott. I made some very decent saves in the games thereafter.
Yeah, he's been in good form. He's been, like I said, he's, as a shot stopper, he's very, very good and probably above League One level as a shot stopper. It's just his size that's holding him back. And that's going to be the only question mark over him. Because like I said, in the stat show, as a shot stopper, he's probably the best in the league at the moment.
Absolutely. Okay, well, it is a new decade, but there was a massive decade before us. And because we haven't spoken in a few weeks, George, we're going to run through a few of your lowlights and your highlights, your most memorable games, most improved player, your player of the year, plenty more of what you're looking forward to in 2020. Coming up next on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show, on Love Sport.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
Aaron Ramsdale. Aaron Ramsdale. Aaron Ramsdale.
Oh, there it is. Indeed, that's like a triple whammy, yeah, of Aaron Ramsdale's there. For anyone listening, we had to chuck that in because George did, of course, mention it in the first quarter of the show, but new slot time, just getting used to things at the moment, and we weren't on the pulse, we weren't on the buttons, so that makes up for it. George, your one Aaron Ramsdale mentioned so far. There might be some more coming,
there
I fear.
Very well might be.
Yes, okay, so we apologise, but there's going to be a few more sirens coming up on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show here on Love Sport London, of course, our new station, our new time from 10 p.m. every Thursday evening. Right, George, a 2019 review. We are a little bit late on this, but of course we haven't had an AFC Wimbledon Fan Show for a few weeks, so it's your time now to just go through some of your highs, your lows, your memorable games, your players of the year, etc., etc.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we felt like we should do one, and like you said, we haven't had a show since, well, before Christmas, so it seemed like a good opportunity to do one. Looking at the highlights of it, I think it will be fairly unanimous from most of our fans. You look at obviously beating West Ham in the FA Cup at home with Toby Sibic winning, well, scoring a very late goal to win 4-2. Bradford away in the league, which obviously, you know, kept us up. And I think those are the games that are really the highlights for pretty much all of our fans. But it'll be interesting to see sort of anyone else's. So if you are listening, tweet in to Love Sport Radio and we'll try and get as many of yours on the air as possible.
Like that, George. Yes, at Love Sport Radio, please do get in touch or call us 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number as well. And you can do just what Mark Hendricks did. I'm not going to read all of these out because I think we'll drive people insane. But let's just say his highlight, his low light, his most memorable game, his most improved player, his player of the year, and his things to look forward to in 2020 all involved a certain lone goalkeeper from last season, George.
Yeah, not a surprise. I think a lot of people will, because he was played such an important part, not just on the pitch with his performances of keeping us up, been sort of trying to bridge the divide between the disconnect between the fans and the players that was present in the first half of last year. And I really think Ramsdale's going to be an important player for us. And the impact of him will be felt not just now, but for a few years to come at least. But we've mentioned the highlight, the low light. Now, there were a lot more of these than there were of highlights. And I think the Burton or Fleetwood home games for me at the end of last season were horrible, as they were the moments that I think all of our fans accepted we wouldn't stay up. Mm-hmm. And somehow we reversed that and overcame that and ended up surviving. And I think for me that's a big surprise. But those were the days where it really didn't look like we would stay up. And I think some of our fans will agree. But like I said, if you don't, get involved. And in terms of memorable games, like I said, West Ham FA Cup. How often does a League One team, where we were at that stage of the season, beat a Premier League club fairly comfortably? I mean, we won 4-2, but it could have been more. Mm. And for me, that was... I don't think any of our fans who were there that night will forget that night anytime soon. But, you know, it's one of those, you look at the league games that I mentioned it in our Christmas review, the Rochdale away in the league game where we won 4-3. Joe Pigger getting a hat-trick at the end and, you know, last-minute winner again. For me, that was the moment, even though it was in February, that was the moment I believe that we weren't out of it, that we had a chance to stand up. And, you know, like I said, last season, the first half was about just sort of dragging through. And then in the second half, that belief started to creep in that we would do it. And Rochdale was a moment like Walsall a couple of years before, which made me genuinely believe we had a chance of getting out of it.
Mm.
And, you know, I was surprised because I was expecting to lose that day and go down. But somehow we won that day and stayed up. And the manner we did it as well that night really gives us hope. And the fact we've got Rochdale away, which will be rearranged like it was last year coming up in midweek, probably around the same time of year, February or very early March this year, could that be the game this year that springboards us towards safety again?
Mm.
And I think that's really what we've got hope for.
Okay, most improved player, boss. Now, this is an interesting choice of an award because I think we've had this discussion before whereby you go to a Premier League or a professional footballer, I should say, and say, you've won our most improved player of the year award. They'll go, I'm a professional footballer. This is the type of award you win when you're in under-11s football. But I do get where you're coming from and you do have a nominee or a decision for this.
Yeah, this is one where I think you've got really two players again. I mean, you look, Paul Kalambahi made his league debut for us on New Year's Day 2019. And you look at where he is now, how far he's come from being a kid at the club, you know, nearly released in the summer, to being a mainstay of our first team, being a regular, being an essential part of our staying up this year and, you know, in the first half of this year before he got injured. And I think really that's positive signs for him. But for me, I'm going to give it to Paul Lossu. Paul Lossu was a player who 99% of our fans wouldn't have heard of, mm-hmm. even in the summer. And there were a lot of people asking me who he was at pre-season games. And now we've just tied him to a new long-term contract and he's our starting left-back.
Well, it's a funny one, this, right? Because he'd only recently signed his first deal and then a few months later, he's actually extended that deal.
Yeah, well, it was one of those where towards the end of last year, the end of last season, he signed his first pro contract, which was very much a, we're going to take a look at him. And that was very much a, okay, we took on that as, you know, a kid you're developing. Now you're a League One starting left-back and you need a contract that, you know, shows that. To make sure that we're not going to lose him for free or, you know, for no money like we have, you know, on young players or first team players in the past. And it's side topic, but I think it's a really important thing, the club learning from those mistakes, because those are the mistakes that will cost us, especially a club on our budget, if we lose players for free.
Mm.
But I think Paul Ossie did the news this week about his new contract. We'll talk about it a bit later on. But for me, that's almost a highlight of the year, the fact that we've learned from a mistake and we're implementing a programme, which means we're getting young players involved and getting them on long contracts, which means that, you know, either they stay for us and play for a long time like Will Nightingale was doing, or like Joe Bursic, Will Mannion, we sell them on and we get a lot of money for them, Toby Sivek. And it's an opportunity where we can, it's a win-win for us now with Paul Ossie. And the teams that are interested in him shows how well he's doing in the first half of this season.
Yeah, a good interview as well that he gave, didn't he, with the club at the time upon signing that new deal, and basically saying there was really no other option. I mean, there were other options potentially for him, but he was like, no, this is where I want to be. I've been with the club for a long time now, and AFC Wimbledon essentially is my home for now.
Yeah, and I think Paul Ossie's a really nice lad. He really respects, you know, the risk the club took on him. And I mean, Mark Robinson, who's now, you know, working more with the first team, he plugged him out of Paul Ossie, who was playing for Rains Park Vale and playing for his local college side. Mark Robinson took the risk and put him in our under-18s, and within 3 years of joining us, he's a League One starting left back, with, you know, championship clubs reportedly interested in him. And I think he's trying to repay that faith shown in him by people like Mark Robinson and Rob Tovey and James Oliver Pearce in the academy as well. Because those are the people who don't get enough credit at the club, because they're the ones who are making us sign these young players who we are now starting to see make an impact in the first team. And that's so encouraging.
Okay, moving on. Player of the year, player of 2019 for you.
Yeah, for me, you have to split this one in two, because, and I apologise, the siren's about to sound. In the first half of the season, the player of the year has to go to Aaron Ramsdale.
Aaron Ramsdale. Aaron Ramsdale. Aaron Ramsdale.
There we go. No surprises there. Aaron Ramsdale, of course, your choice there, George. Doesn't surprise me one bit.
No. And in the second half of the year, I mean, another obvious one is Marcus Fors, because of how well he's done since he joined us in September. Because he's made a huge impact for us. And if we do step, even if he does go back, it will be purely because of him. And I think, also, if you are looking at people who have been here across the year, I mean, Terrell Thomas is a player who I have to apologise for, because I didn't rate him when he joined us. I genuinely thought it was a waste of money and a horrific signing. However, he's come in, he's done well, he's stabilised the club, and especially at the back where we've had a lot of injuries, and he's never looked out of his level despite, you know, playing non-league before he came to us. And I think, really, he's been our player of the 2019 calendar year across the whole year in terms of someone who's been with us the whole time. And, you know, for me, a centre-back shows what kept us up last year and what was the most stable bit about the first half of this year.
Massive goal as well, of course, wasn't it, at home to Portsmouth back in October. We'll get on to the rematch, the next game against Pompey, of course, the only team unbeaten in League One at home this season. That will come later. I just want to touch on the two players of the year that you mentioned there. Obviously, both loan players. Now, we know the budget. We don't want to talk too much about budget. Sorry, Mark. But is there a concern for you that the two players you've highlighted as being the best players for AFC Wimbledon this season are your loan players?
I don't think that's really a concern. I mean, you look at it and most clubs in the league will say their star players are loanees, because at our level, that's what you get. You get the Premier League or a high-level championship loanee, and they will be your best player. And you look and I think Ramsdale last year and so far this year would have won, you know, Player of the Year award at probably every team below the outside the Premier League. You know, everyone would have given Ramsdale for what he's done with us and what he's done with Bournemouth. And you look at Force and the number of goals he's scored, you know, this year with us. I think that just goes to show, you know, how good a player he is when you look at how many goals the rest of our strike force has scored. And really, I think he deserves credit for that. And you look at his stats, he's probably the top striker in the league in terms of goals per minute. And for me, those players deserve it. And it's not a concern that they're on loan, because that's what you expect when you're in our position.
Okay. There's a reason to be optimistic, isn't there, George?
Yeah, and for me, it's, again, we've touched on it a bit. You've got, you know, players like Jack Rudoni, who's come in the last few games, done very, very well. Looks like he's been a first teamer for 3 years, not three games. And for me, you look at him, you look at Paul Ossie, you look at Paul Kalambai, and the young players implementing themselves in the first team and becoming key players in our first team squad. For me, they're the reasons we have to be positive and have to be optimistic, because they're the future of our club, and they're coming in. And like I said, I know I go on about the academy a lot, but it's, you know, the proof's in the pudding now that they're doing really well. They've implemented themselves in the first team. And there's now a pathway for our young players to go from the under-16s, the 18s to the first team. And for me, that's so encouraging that we'll benefit from in the next 5-10 years, not just right now.
Well, I know that you are a massive advocate, of course, of the youth setup. And in terms of 2020 and what you're looking forward to, we know that it's a huge part of Glenn Hodges' plan, of course. He's hoping to one day walk out and manage a team, be it at Kings Meadow, be it at Plough Lane, of 11 homegrown academy players. And this is what you'd like to see more of in 2020.
Yeah, it is. And I think we will see more of it. I mean, you look at people like, if you look at our sort of starting 11 when everyone's fit, there probably are at least 4 players in that who are homegrown, maybe more. And it will be more as time goes on. And over the summer, we're probably going to have to push young players more than they already have been into the first team because of our budget. And I think you look at that, and the time when we have 7 or 8 or one day potentially even 10 or 11 homegrown players in our squad, that's not a million miles away. And I can see that happening very, very soon. And for me, that's a huge positive, because no matter what any fan wants, you want to be competitive and you want those boys to understand the club and to have come through your own youth system. And for me, that pathway is now there, whereas it wasn't under previous managers.
Okay. Now, it was the end of a decade. I know you've just reviewed the year, but can you try your hardest here, George, to encapsulate everything about AFC Wimbledon, what it meant to you over the course of the past 10 years?
It's been a very long decade for us. I mean, the decade starting with a 1-0 defeat to Hayes and Yedin in the conference. So for us to go from there to winning the conference playoff final at the City of Manchester Stadium, to sort of stabilising in League 2, then going on that run that got us promoted, you know, beating Plymouth at Wembley, and now having a run in League 1, whereas 10 years ago that would have been impossible. Right now we're a League 1 club with potentially a new stadium at Plough Lane within the next sort of 6 months. And whereas you look at where we were 10 years ago, that would have been impossible. So it's been a hugely positive decade for us, even if the last few years have been incredibly rough.
Yep, they have indeed. The last couple of months have been incredibly rough. If you're an AFC Wimbledon fan, we'll get onto plenty of that later. We're going to be looking ahead to the January transfer window, of course. That is now in full swing. A bit of a League One review as well. But before we get onto all of that, I've had a great tweet in from Mike. I love this. He's just referring to the favourite slash worst moment we were discussing earlier. Mike has said, having to tell my wife that we were playing West Ham again after convincing her to go to the first West Ham game on our anniversary by saying, when will we ever get to play West Ham at home again? She still holds it against me.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with George Jones of the 9 Years podcast. We're going to be looking ahead to the Portsmouth game later on in the show. Of course, Portsmouth, the only team unbeaten at home in League One now. That record stood, of course, Wickham getting hammered by Coventry on Boxing Day. I think it was 4-1 there. Matt Godden with a hat-trick. Successive hat-tricks for Matt Godden, by the way. We talked about the bonkers nature of League One. That is just another example of it. And we're now going to get on to a discussion about transfers and the EFL in general. But before we do that, George, of course, the situation at AFC Wimbledon is very well documented at the moment. We've spoken about it at length on this particular show, on this station, over the course of the festive period. We're not going to get too much into it right now, but just give us a very quick update about where we're going to be regarding an update.
So for those of you who aren't aware, we're £11 million short on our new stadium. We've done a share issue that's come back. We're still £11 million short. And at the moment, there is a survey out by the club basically asking fans if they're interested in a bond issue, which would basically be the fans loaning the club money. And at the moment, that's still in sort of the club are investigating whether that's viable. But I expect news on that over the next couple of weeks. And really, it's going to come down to how much money could we raise from that. And does that make up enough of the shortfall to get a loan from a business in? Or are we going to have to seriously consider this idea of selling out and abandoning the club vision? Which, you know, all of our fans have different views on it. And you can probably guess where I sit on it just by how I said it then. But I think
we all know where you sit on it, George.
Yes. But I think it's very important that this discussion is going to happen. And it'll happen over the next 2 months. But I think there'll be serious developments over the next couple of weeks, and then it'll move very quickly from there.
Okay, so next week we'll be talking more about that. But right now, let's talk transfers. Now, with regards to personnel playing staff, we've seen, of course, in the week, Scott Wagstaff has returned. Reuben Collins both returning to training. We see some great action online from the club. They've released that. Anthony Wordsworth is back. Kwezi, you'll be delighted to hear. And Adam Roscoe also back. Non-contact training, non-contact work for them. So they'll be back in due course, which is good for you, George.
Yeah, there's no jokes about Kwezi and non-contact. There are no jokes to be made there at all.
Moving swiftly on, transfers with regards to incomings and outgoings. Now, I know that you're concerned, of course, about Marcus Force, but a teammate of his has arrived on loan, Mads Beck Sorensen from Brentford.
Yeah, he's a player who, you know, it took a while for us to work out who he was when that deal was announced earlier. But you look at him...
In what sense?
Just because he's not a player that was on our radar.
Right.
Whereas Ryan Delaney we knew about because we'd come up against him in the past. Whereas, you know, we've looked into him and he looks like a very promising player. He's in on loan till the end of the season, and clearly that's another indicator that Brentford are very happy with what we've done with Marcus Force. And it's one of those deals where we went into this window effectively saying if we can keep Delaney, Sanders and Force, we've got a chance of staying up. We've kept Sanders, that deal was announced earlier, we've got him till the end of the season at least. Force, who knows what could happen, hopefully he stays. But it looks like we've upgraded on Ryan Delaney, who's gone back to Rochdale. Because Sorensen looks like a really solid left-footed player. Apparently he's got a long throw on him as well, which just gives us an extra option. And I think really his experience, he's a Danish under-21 international. He's somebody who could really do well with us. And especially when you look at Nestor and Paul Osu, who are both our left wing backs, they're so young and inexperienced. Having someone who naturally left-footed on the left side of that back three will certainly help. And I'm really, really encouraging. It's a really positive signing for us. Much better than we've done in sort of Januaries in the past, where it's been a bit of a panic. And I think he's come in. Hopefully he'll do really well for us. It'll be interesting to see how he settles in on Saturday against Portsmouth.
Yeah, indeed. And I think the really good thing about this, the good sign, is that same as Marcus Force, who signed the deal with Brentford and initially went straight out on loan to you guys, he's done the same thing, hasn't he, Mads? He's initially signed an extended deal at Brentford and then gone out on loan. I actually spoke to a couple of the guys from Besotted, both about Force and Mads, before we came on air today. And Robin Hood, McMichael, they all have names, by the way, on the Brentford fan show here on Love Sport on Besotted. So maybe that's something you want to think about, George. Think of a little nickname for yourself and we'll do that next week, shall we? You can have one, Nick can have one, Kevin can have one. Everyone can have a little nickname.
Yeah, we'll see how that one goes down.
Well, Robin did say that, you know, obviously left-footed centre-half, can play at left-back too. He said he's an assured centre-back with a good tackle, reads the game well and is good at sticking a last-ditch tackle in. He can be a bit exposed by pacey players and his distribution needs some work, but obviously the spell on loan should help build his confidence, just like it has for Marcus Force. He hasn't had a run of games to prove himself, but he's looked good when he's played.
And I think that's something that's really encouraging, because you look at the other centre-backs we've got... Luke O'Neill's been playing in the back three, Terrell Thomas, Paul Kalambay. They're not slow players. Paul Osu and Nestor, who will be on the wing-backs on that side, they're very, very quick players. And so for me, the lack of pace isn't such an overwhelming concern. And really, the main thing that we've been exploited about on that left is the height, because Nestor and Paul are very small players. And the fact that we've got someone who sounds like just a bit of a unit on there and who doesn't mind getting involved on the physical side of the game, that could be what we've been missing on the left side to try and shore up that back line. And again, if we're creating goals now, we're creating chances. If this solidifies us at the back, that's a very good sign for where we end this season.
It absolutely is. Any other transfer news you wanted to share, George?
Yeah, there's one on the star front, Jason Moriarty, who's been a sort of fitness coach / sports scientist with us for a very long time. He joined us in the conference way back in 2010. He's left the club for a new opportunity abroad. And he's one of those where he was one of the last old guard with us in non-league to leave the club. And I can honestly say we wouldn't be in the Football League without him. He was so far ahead of his time when he first joined us. He's done so well on such a small budget to keep our players physically fit enough to compete in League One. And I think he's going to be a big miss that will be felt for a long time to come.
Hear, hear. Okay. Well, let's talk a bit now about the EFL in general. Of course, the news today has come out that Southend's players will meet with the PFA on Friday to discuss the non-payment of wages in December. It just goes on and on and on, doesn't it? It's one story after another. Of course, the issues regarding Bury and Bolton this season already. We're hearing, of course, Macclesfield, they were docked 6 points. We don't know what's going to happen there. To be fair, Macclesfield always seem to perform in the face of adversity. Great result last weekend. But you've got something to say about this.
Yeah, and I think we talked about it at the start of the season when Bury and Bolton were looking bleak. But then we talked about it in the farcical penalty they were originally given. Then the EFL appealed it. And now the fact that basically the independent panel this week appeared to effectively say to the EFL, because nothing was written down, we have to understand what the original penalty given to Bolton was, which is effectively a suspended points penalty. Which is a joke of a decision. But it does mean now Macclesfield have appealed their points deduction. And it opens a whole can of worms of basically any team that's ever been given a points deduction for failing to pay their players can now appeal it. And who knows where this is going to end. But it does mean the EFL effectively can't give out any more points deductions until they get clubs to agree on a set of rules. And no club's going to agree on a set of rules which could affect them getting a points deduction. So really, this is an incredibly serious situation where we are right now. And with Southend being where they are, with a winding up petition potentially coming up against them and failing to pay their players, we're looking at a situation, I mentioned it at the start of the season, it's not conceivable to see another two or three Football League clubs go under in the next 3 years. And that's a horrific position that EFL has led the football league in this country into, because that's a position we can't afford to be in. We can't afford to lose these sort of small, medium-sized clubs, because they're the backbone of the game. You look at Southend, the players they've developed, look at Macclesfield, what they're doing. And this cannot be allowed to happen, and it's been allowed to happen for too long, of the EFL allowing clubs to spend way over what they can actually afford. You look at the reports coming out of the Championship a couple of weeks ago, and even some Championship clubs are now calling for a wage cap. And the fact that clubs are now having to say, you have to stop us from self-harming, it's a joke. The EFL have allowed this situation to get way out of hand, and it's going to seriously damage the long-term future of the game. And that's not including however many clubs we could lose over the next 3 years. And it's a sorry sight for football that we are where we are. And lessons need to be learned very quickly to avoid another club ending up the same way Bury did.
4 winding up petitions last year for Southend. 4, for crying out loud. I know Ron Martin has come out this week, the chairman, of course, saying that he's already paid the players, the staff, but there have been reports since then, which is why this is happening, that's actually not entirely true.
Yeah, and it's the same when Bury came out, and Bury were in the final days of them, where, you know, their owner was coming out with all these ridiculous things saying everyone was paid, there was no debt, everything was fine, and they were in court the next day on a winding up petition. And the fact that Dale at Bury is still fighting to try and save the club even though it's dead just goes to show how wrong some of these owners are. And you look at Southend, they're still trying to build a ridiculous new stadium, which they can't afford where they are now, let alone a new ground. And you look at it, and something needs to be done to make sure that, A, these owners don't take control of the clubs in the first place. But if they do, you need a way of getting them out. Fans need to say on being able to kick owners out of their own club effectively. But also you need a way of restricting spending to a limit of the club's income. Yes, it means there'll be clubs that suffer from that because they'll fall down to their back level, like Bournemouth would inevitably fall back down the leagues. But if that means you have a club in 100 years' time, surely it's worth playing League One football than no football at all.
Do you think in the case of Southend it's a bit difficult as well when you look at the management and you look at Sol Campbell and Andrew Cole, who's also on the management there, and these guys, listen, I don't know about their finances behind closed doors, but you would, if you were to look at what they earned as footballers for a long time at the very top of the game, that must be quite a difficult dynamic from management. And I know Sol Campbell's he's owed, what, 180 odd grand or so from Macclesfield that he's still waiting to be paid. So there's a lot of money there that he hasn't received. Whether that's the right figure or not, I'm just speculating here. But I know that he's owed a lot from Macclesfield Town that he's obviously holding out on. But for Sol Campbell and Andrew Cole, who have both earned a lot from the game, it must be quite a difficult dynamic when your players, who are on nowhere near what they were earning, are standing there going, well, we haven't been paid our wages and you two are doing all right.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing. It's not just, I mean, the senior pros at the club, they're the ones who will be fine. The ones who have been earning 2 or 3K a week for five years. They'll be fine. It's the young players, the ones who, you know, the players who it's the first year earning real money. They're the ones who, you know, or the ones with young families. They're the ones who suffer. And not enough thought is given to players, because when you think of a footballer, sure, everyone's head goes to Premier League money. And boys in League 1 and League 2, they're not on that. Even the top earners. The top earner at our club's on 3 or 4K a week. And yes, that's a lot of money for a normal person. But in football terms, it's nothing. And it's really important that clubs restrict their spending to what is sustainable, but also to make sure that wages get paid every week and every month on time. And the way to do that is to just put ridiculously harsh penalties on owners. So make it so if wages are a week late, there is a triple the wage fine for the club or for the owner of the club. That's got to be the way it's got to be to make sure clubs are managed and run in a sustainable fashion, to make sure that every club around now is around in 100 years' time.
But do you think that will happen, though, Joe? This is the problem, and it will take radical action because, listen, the fit and proper persons test, everybody always alludes to that. Well, that's clearly not too strenuous, is it?
No, and I think it's getting to a stage now where it will have to happen because clubs are now starting to realise what's happened isn't sustainable. And look, you've got some owners like Andy Holt at Accrington who's been fighting on this issue for a very long time. And you've got to look at some clubs are now fighting saying, you know what, we have to do something. Because more and more fan groups are trying to campaign owners. You look, fans are more against owners now than ever. And I think it's really important that we have a sustainable model for every club in this country to make sure, like I said, they're here in 50 or 100 years' time. Because it doesn't matter if you're playing Premier League football for 2 years over the next 5 years if you buy your way through the league. If in 10 years after that you don't exist, like nearly happened with Bolton, nearly happened with Blackpool, the list goes on. Bury went out of business trying to buy access to the Championship, which isn't even financially sustainable division in its own right, let alone going any further. And it's really important that, especially in the lower leagues, clubs don't spend what they can't afford. And you look at clubs like Salford, if I know they've got the sort of 92 club of 92 as the front men, but the money behind that, if that guy just decides he's not going to put any more money in, Salford won't exist in 2 years. And it's really important we learn from those clubs like that and make sure that there is not that risk of clubs not existing in the future purely because they wanted to try and buy their way through the leagues a couple of years faster than they otherwise would do.
Yeah, absolutely. Peter Lim there at Salford City. To be fair, they've just signed Elliot Thomas from Millwall. And you'd imagine...
Tom Elliot, sorry.
When I say Elliot Thomas?
Yeah.
Tom Elliot, that's what I meant. Sure, rant, George, is confusing me. But to be fair, a very good rant as well. But I was going to say that the wages I made, he's probably on decent money if you think he's gone down from the Championship down to League Two there. But that was George Jones there from the 9 Years podcast ranting about the EFL, quite rightly so. Couldn't agree more with you, George. But hey, you're in League One, so just be thankful that you don't have VAR.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
It's the AFC Wimbledon fan show here on Love Sport. We've got about 9 minutes to go, so now we are going to look ahead to the big game at the weekend against Portsmouth, George. Portsmouth, the only unbeaten team at home in League One. The Fratton Fortress is living on yet again. However, not unbeaten against AFC Wimbledon since you guys returned to the Football League, of course.
No, it's one of those things where we've actually got a really good record against Portsmouth home and away. And it's one of those that makes very little sense. Some teams we have a great record against, Portsmouth, Wickham, Fleetwood. And some teams we have a horrific record against, such as Bristol Rovers. And it's one of those where we seem to do really well at Portsmouth and we always put up a good performance. We beat them earlier in the season. And it's one of those where you look at that game and on paper, we don't have a chance. Not a chance. And you look at the odds and they sort of follow that. But we go there. We've got an outside chance with our new signings. Like I said, like you hinted earlier, Scott Wagstaff's back in contention now. We've got the new signings, obviously, Sorensen. Looks like Marcus Force is still with us. We've still got Sanders as well. And all of a sudden, now we're going into this game with a chance. On paper, we don't have a chance. But I think we've got a good chance of getting a result there. And that's something which we shouldn't do, but somehow we do because of our record there in the past. We've beaten them there, I think, three times in all competitions. And
you've beaten them twice, I think, in all competitions away from home.
Okay. It's like I said, and I think there was a draw as well.
There was a draw. Yeah. In fact, can you remember the last time you beat them in league action, George?
That was earlier in the season when we beat them at home. I can't remember the last time.
At Fratton Park, boss.
I cannot remember that.
No? Boxing Day, 2014. I'm sure you were there. It was a great Christmas present for yourself. 2-0 was the score. Frankie Sutherland and Matt Tubbs.
Yeah, Frankie Sutherland with a brilliant goal that day and Matt Tubbs refusing to celebrate because he knew he'd be joining Portsmouth later that week.
It's all come flooding back to him.
Yes, it has. I should have remembered that one.
When you look at their form, however, of course, good cup victory against Fleetwood last week. The only League One tie on that day in the FA Cup third round. But lost one and drew one, of course. Lost away to MK in a terrible result, really, at Stadium MK, but drawing against Gillingham.
Yeah, and Portsmouth, like I said, League One, anyone can beat anyone, and you've got to bear that in mind. But you look at Portsmouth, and after a run like that, it's either going to go one or two ways. Either they're going to bounce back and put four past us, or they're going to sink and we're going to beat them. And it's one of those where you look at it, and then you look at sort of wider factors about it. You look at their strengths, their weaknesses as a team, how they've been scoring and conceding their goals, and you look at the variables, and you look at it and think, this game could go either way. If they turn up, they win. But if they're not at their best, we've got a good chance. And then you look at the referee, which every fan who's going to the game's heart will sink when they see who we've got this week. We've got Mr. Trevor Kell, who, as any fan who has ever watched League One football will know, is probably in his own level of League One refereeing, which takes some doing. But not all of our fans hate him because he did get us promoted by an awful decision when we were at home to Accrington when he disallowed a goal because he was playing for half-time as the ball was in mid-air. So we have to thank him for that, but he's a referee who, depending on which way he wants to sort of put his hand every decision, either you're going to win the game or lose the game just because of what mood he's in.
I cannot tell you the number of journos or fans that speak on the League One post-match fan show, which you can catch, of course, on Love Sport every Saturday at 8 p.m, who moan about Trevor Kettle. Yeah. Everybody moans about Trevor Kettle. And begs the question, doesn't it? It's a bit like when we all know a player isn't good enough and every fan can see it, yet that player continually gets picked. It's the same with Trevor Kettle. It seems to be that way, that everybody goes, he's not a very good referee, but he continues to referee professional football matches.
Yeah, and it is embarrassing. I mean, you look at it and the referees, Pagmole, are trying to get League One and Two referees full-time. And if someone like Trevor Kettle could make an earning out of being a full-time referee, something's seriously wrong in our game. Because you look at him, he's the new Andy Durso, is the way someone put it to me the other week. He's a referee who has absolutely no business refereeing anywhere near a professional game. Probably not even a Sunday league game, and yet somehow we get a League One gig. Or I think he had a championship game a couple of weeks ago. No one knows how he's still here, but somehow he's still ruining everyone's Saturday, every week on a spin for however many seasons he's been a referee.
Have you ever refed? We had this conversation. Must have had this conversation. I must have asked you whether you've done refereeing before in your time.
No, I've never refereed 11-a-side.
No?
No. Thankfully not.
Refereed 5-a-side?
Yeah.
Have you?
Yeah.
What, like the goals in midweek?
A couple of games, not very successfully.
Oh, did you get abuse?
Yes.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's not very nice, is it?
No, well, it's good enough, because as far as I'm concerned, if I've been abused as a referee, that means I can speak about Trevor Kettle with complete and utter freedom.
Nice, you can empathise. Okay, well, the fact that this is away from home, by my watch, it's 7 points taken from a possible 36 on the road this season. That is not good enough.
No, there was a stat where you look at it in every year we've averaged, every season before this year, we've averaged one and a half, 1.6 points per game away from home. Before the Christmas schedule, we were averaging 0.36 points per game away from home this season. And that is sort of the form that will get you relegated, regardless of how well you're doing at home. Like I said, we beat Bristol Rovers. That's going to be fresh in our minds, because, again, going to a team, decent atmosphere at Bristol, similar sort of club to Portsmouth at the moment in terms of size and atmosphere. And you've got to go there and hope we can pull something off, because if we can build a bit of momentum, especially away from home, that'll be the form that keeps us up this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's worth noting as well that 1-0 victory earlier on in the season, massive at the time, a part of that 4-game winning streak, wasn't it, under Glyn Hodges when he was then in temporary charge.
Yeah, and it was one of those, I think it was a fairly late goal, Terrell Thomas got it.
It was the dying moments,
yes.
George.
And it was one of those moments where it gave us a boost, and it will be depending on how Portsmouth is sinking, depending on how we line up, because we've got a horrific injury list at the moment. Players are starting to come back, but we're still severely under strength. But it will depend on how quickly the new boys settle in, especially that Sorensen at left wing back, because Portsmouth attack out wide a lot. They've got some very good attacking players. And it's probably making your sort of senior League One debut on loan at a new club away to Portsmouth, in the same place that Paul Kalambai made his senior debut last year, is an incredibly tough place to do it. I mean, defending in the Fratton end, in, you know, your first taste of League One football with players you don't really know, only had one or two sessions with, that's going to be a really tough test for him. And if he can come through that, he can probably play at any ground in League One. And we'll learn a lot about him this week.
Okay, well, I referenced there that 4-game winning streak under Glyn Hodges. He is now permanent manager. We're back after a bit of a break, George. Where are you at? Where are you at with Glyn? Where are you at with AFC Wimbledon? Where are you at with survival this season?
Well, I think when you look at it, Glyn Hodges has been incredible since he came in. He did incredibly well when he was a caretaker. Then he was appointed full-time and sort of lost a couple of games, had a bad run. But we picked up a bit there. Yes, we're a bit inconsistent, but you'd expect that. But I think we're looking much better under Glyn than we did under Neil or under Wally. And I think realistically there's a bit more optimism. The players seem to like Glyn more. He's got a much better philosophy. He seems to be willing to take a risk and play young players more often than Wally did. Wally started introducing that philosophy, but Glyn's gone that step further of playing people like Rudoni, Paulos, who's getting more minutes under Glyn than he did under Wally. You know, and these are encouraging signs for us. And in terms of staying up this year, you look at it, we've got a better chance now than we did in September. But I think we will not know if we're going to stop until Marcus Forth is either here on February the 1st or gone back. I think our season does come down to Marcus Forth staying or going.
It always ends on Marcus Forth, doesn't it, George? Well, this has been the Wimbledon Fan Show, the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show for another week. We are back now. Remember, Thursday nights, 10 p.m. here on Love Sport London. We will see you next time.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.